Hey, bad movie lovers. It's me, your host, Nick Scheist. And I wanted to let you know about our new partnership with Artist Bookkeeping. As a podcaster and producer, I'm focused on developing a good show for you and getting the show out to more listeners. But behind the scenes, there's a lot that goes into running and maintaining a podcast network. Between hosting fees, equipment, studio rentals, website domains, security essentials, and probably a few other things I'm forgetting, there are a lot of expenses to keep track of. That's why I turn to Artist Bookkeeping for help. After a quick discovery call and free assessment, plus a look at the results together, I walked away with a full picture of my business's financial situation and a clear, flat fee quote with no long-term commitment. But most importantly, I came away with a partner I can really trust. So now I can focus on growing the show, knowing that I have someone in my corner to look at the numbers and give me fair, honest guidance. And I love that it's a real conversation, not just a report. So if you want clear numbers, predictable cash flow, and a partner you can trust, go to artistbookkeeping.com today to schedule your free consultation. That's A-R-T-I-S bookkeeping.com. Bookkeeping is an art, so choose Artist Bookkeeping.
And I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder. One of the four beasts saying, "Come and see," and I saw. And behold, bad movie futures.
Hello, bad movie lovers, and welcome to a special preview of Bad Movie Futures, the new members-only series here at Bad Movies We Love. What you're about to hear are the first 15 minutes or so of my conversation with Paul from Faulty Signal on Joachim Rønning's Tron Ares from 2025. If you like what you hear and you want to become an official card-carrying member of the Resistance Frontlines, make sure that you check the show notes and stay tuned at the end of the preview for details on how to sign up. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy the preview. Paul, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me on. It's my first time doing a podcast, so this is cool.
Oh, wow, really? I mean, looks like you got the setup already, so I mean...
I mean, you know, some people started baking during COVID. I was like, I'm going to be a streamer. And then I tried it for like a week and I was like, no.
Yeah, I get that. I streamed a little bit at the beginning, but I was like, I don't want to get the thing that I need to connect to do this thing. And then I'm just like, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. I got other hobbies. It's okay. Baking was
exactly. Yeah. Were you like a cake guy or a bread guy?
Well, I started making like homemade bread so that like we could always have like a staple on hand and didn't have to worry too much. And then I got into more of like cookies, and then I started experimenting with cakes and stuff as well. So cakes are probably still not my strong suit, but I make a really good banana bread that I sort of like. I always buy bananas and I'm like, hey, this is a great idea. I love bananas. And then I forget about them and I'm like, oh, those are brown. I should probably turn those into banana bread. And then I give that banana bread away to neighbors or friends or something like that. So, yeah, a little bit of everything. I made a cake recently.
Nice.
But, you know, we're not here to talk about cake. I mean, we could do a whole episode on baking and cakes, but we're here to talk about Tron Ares from last year. Yeah. I mean, that sigh, I think, is indicative of mostly general consensus with this movie. When I first put everything into my like scoring spreadsheet, started mapping out what are the movies that I saw in 2025 that would even qualify for being on this particular subseries of the show, Tron was one of them. And I was just curious because I started running the numbers a while ago. And then I was like, let me look back and see if, you know, the scores went up or down. And it actually went down by like a few points. So I should have looked at what it was before, but it did lose a couple of points in, I think the IMDb score went down a little bit. The Rotten Tomatoes critic score went down a little bit. No, it was the Letterboxd score that went down and the Google score went down a little bit. So it gives us a Bad Movies We Love total score of 61.17 out of 100. And that's like slightly above
where I normally pull movies from. So it's in the bubble zone, but it is going down. And I think it's still fair game here for this conversation. So I heard you let out an audible sigh of disappointment when we mentioned that we're talking about this movie. And I think the fun part about this particular subseries is that this isn't something where we have to love the movie. This is just a conversation about the movie, I think, in earnest. So you maybe didn't love the movie?
I gotta say, I'm a Tron fan.
Okay. And I see the hat and the tattoo.
So going into it, you know, I saw the reviews and people talking about, like, oh, Jared Leto, and the response initially kind of seemed to be, you know, fairly tepid, but the trailer looked cool. So I figured if nothing else, it's going to have that vibe. Like Tron, the plot of Tron, the story, the acting, everything about it. Like it's never really been like amazing. It's always kind of been like that vibe. Each one has a very distinct vibe. And so I was like, okay, if nothing else, it's going to have a good vibe. And so I was hoping that that would be the case. And every now and then it really scratches that itch. There's a few scenes, you know, the jet ski scene or like the motorcycle chase. There's moments where it's like, yes, that is exactly what I wanted. And then it's just sandwiched in the middle of these long stretches where it's just kind of like, you're so close. You're so close to being exactly what I wanted. And one of the first shots, I'll be really nitpicky. When they introduce Dillinger, it's that overhead shot and he walks out. The floor are all triangular patterns and the light's a triangle and he's standing in the middle of it. And it's like, okay, because Tron is, it's very much, you know, lines and the colors and the shapes and just this very sort of sleek, clean, aesthetically pleasing look. And then looking at it, it just kind of annoyed me because the light is slightly too big. So it doesn't line up with the triangles. And he's like standing slightly off center. And it's such a stupid nitpick. But just watching, it was like, if that was Tron Legacy, they would have lined that up to the millimeter. And that's the movie for me right there. Is like they knew what they were trying to do, but just repeatedly, they just didn't quite do it. And it's so frustrating watching because I don't hate it. I don't love it. I like some parts of it. I really like it. And then there's other parts where my brain just completely tunes out. And it's so frustrating because all the elements, you can tell that they knew what they needed to do, but they just couldn't quite make it. It's so frustrating.
How many times have you seen it?
So I've seen it 3 times now. I saw it once in theaters, and then I've watched it once shortly after it released to wherever it released to. And then I watched it again this morning just to refresh my memory on it. And okay. I think I like it more each time.
Interesting. I'm having the opposite experience where I like it less each time I watch it. And I would say that I still don't hate it. I saw it in theaters, I think, opening weekend. And I was like, wow, this looks amazing. I saw it in IMAX. I was like, the visual palette for it, I really like the red and black, the Dillinger grid, the sort of cyberpunk brutalism of that world. I'm like, love all that. I even like the suit design, the motorcycle, the recognizer, all of the stuff, like the visual presence of the film. I like when it's leaning into the Tron stuff. And the score, I will give credit where credit is due. The score is really good. I love it. And I'm just like, I watched it a second time because after the first one, I was like, ooh, this would be something that is really awesome in IMAX 3D. I was wrong. I feel like the IMAX 3D actually detracts from the visual elements, like that. Well, the CGI design stuff specifically. Because there's more of a contrast between the edges of the visual CGI stuff and the background. So all of a sudden, like, it feels less integrated and not in a way that sort of is immersive. Like, like the 3D was almost more of an afterthought. Like when you're completely immersed in sort of like the digital world, it still seems like it makes sense. But especially when you start to bring some of the Tron stuff to the real world, the there's like a weird, you know, harmonic like dissonance between what you're sort of supposed to be feeling. Like you're supposed to feel that it's real and present in that world, and the 3D actually makes it feel less real in the real world. And then watching it at home, I'm like, okay, it's back to normal. And I'm like, okay, so the things I liked about the way that it looked the first time I saw it, I think still hold up pretty well. But the real world is like super boring by yes. comparison in between. Just like everything about the way that it's shot in the real world, it's like all of the design choices, all of like the cinematography, just like there's no attention to detail in that kind of stuff. But every time there's like a stunt scene with like the light bikes out in the city look really good. When the recognizer's coming into the city, it looks good. So you get some elements like that, but kind of like everything else in between with the real world is like, this is kind of just like really bland. And maybe it's because the production design is so heavily focused on like that red and black motif that the real world sort of just like looks dull by comparison. But I'm just like, I kind of wish the whole movie was just on the grid.
That would have been, I mean, that's basically what Legacy did. They put him in and then they just kind of stayed there. It's like they knew. It's like, why are people aren't here to see Vancouver? They're here to see the grid. They want to see cool shit on the grid. And then this one, I heard someone describe it as pixels, but serious. And it kind of is at times. It's like I don't hate the characters. I don't hate like the story. You know, some of it's pretty good. I've completely forgotten his name that played Dillinger. He's a solid villain. It's cool seeing Gillian Anderson. But I don't know, if you give me the choice between watching light bikes, like light cycles in the grid versus watching motorcycles, it's like it's a Tron movie. Give me more of this.
Yeah. I mean, the cast is not like inherently bad. Evan Peters is a good villain in the story as Dillinger. I like him, and I feel like he gives the best performance in the movie. So I would actually sort of prefer the movie to be more based around him sort of just being like an evil tech billionaire. I think that sort of reads the room pretty well. And watching the movie again and again and again, the first one I was like, wow, I didn't think, like the first time I watched it, wow, 3D printing is really not the way of the future in the way, or like the way that this is predicting the value of 3D printing is a little bit interesting. And then so I went back into it again thinking like, okay, this is a story about an AI that's like kind of benevolent, and really it's just the person at the helm of designing the AI that is evil. But then even his evil designs, sort of like the AI is the benevolent one that pushes back against it. And I'm like, Disney just signed that contract with like OpenAI to like cannibalize all their own properties too. And I'm just like, is this like some pro AI propaganda thing by Disney here in order to like soften the blow? Because at the end of the day, it's like the real moral of the story, which I feel like the movie doesn't grapple with like its own the moral arc within its own universe, because it's like, oh, we just have like AI is inevitable, and we just have to hope that the person teaching the AI is the benevolent billionaire and not the psycho nepo baby kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm just like, I was struggling more with the story the more that I tried to watch it, because I'm like, the visual elements are great. If I watched this movie with like no dialogue, if there was just a slider to turn off all the dialogue but like keep the sound effects and the visuals, I'd be like, okay, this is like a really fun experience for most of it. But yeah, the story element itself, I'm like, okay, you want the permanence code in order to grow food for people that like for food sustainability, right? Like that part of the story is what, 2%? Like her motivations to do that is so small. Her, like, I don't know. I what do you think?
It almost reminded me of Ant-Man, the first one. You know, he creates we have this technology and we can shrink things down to a minute size. It's like, you've just rendered the entire shipping industry obsolete. What are we going to do with it? We're going to use it for soldiers. And it's kind of the same. That's kind of my vibe here with the same thing. It's like you can make whatever you want. It's like, oh, we're gonna make temporary tanks. It's like, all right, that's fine, I guess. Cool designs, but it doesn't really feel connect. Like, it almost feels like the real world and the grid really are kind of two different stories. Like, we have bad billionaire who wants to print super soldiers, but then over here we have AI learning to feel. And I mean, it's Jared Leto. He's not great, but like, he's not terrible as cold, unfeeling AI learning to feel. And there, it's kind of interesting with some of the other ones throughout the movie, you know, particularly at the very end where she's you know, in the sprinkler and she's feeling water for the first time landing on her. And it's like, she kind of starts to experience that same sort of the seeds have been planted to experience emotion again. And it's like that seemed like a far more interesting thing, but it seemed like it couldn't really decide if it wanted to be, it didn't know which one it really wanted to do. And so each one sort of ends up being a little bit underbaked. It's like, oh, AI kind of learns to feel, he really likes Depeche Mode. And then, oh yeah, the bad guy billionaire, he's made the AI and he's going to kind of use it for, you know, your standard military stuff. And it's like both of them, if they'd focused on one or the other, like you had said, either go full vibes with the AI or really drill down on the tech billionaire, that would have been such a better storyline, and it would have been so much better served by the visuals. Whereas as they kind of split the difference, and I assume it probably is because it is a Disney movie, they don't really want to, that's kind of a touchy subject, especially when you're spending billions of dollars on AI. You don't want to push the pro AI too far, because then it becomes too obvious and you don't want to undersell it. So they kind of split that middle difference of like, well, it could be bad, but it could be good. And it's like, eh.
Thank you for checking out this preview episode of Bad Movie Futures. We started with 2024 films, and the goal is to keep doing these new movies at least once a month, because there are always new movies in the worst of the year crosshairs. So if the shoe fits, I'm happy to wear it. You can sign up for the members-only tier by clicking on the link in the show notes or going to badmovieswelove.captivate.fm/support. I hope to see you soon.